Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change? Greetings, everyone. I am Dr. Tommy Watson. Welcome to Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like yourself who bounce back from failure and adversity to go on and live their best lives. Today's show is sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we teach people how to tell their story and sell their story. So if you want to be in that category, go to tawatson.com and look under the programs tab and go into Million Dollar Pathways to get started. So are you guys ready for an amazing show today? Joining me, I have my friend, my fraternity brother, Keith Weiss. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going, Dr. Watson?
Good, brother. Good to see you. How's life treating you?
You know, I think if I was any better, I'd be Dr. Tommy Watson.
And I want to be in your shoes. I want to be you. So, again, it's a pleasure having you on. We've been friends for over 10 years now. We met when I was back in Minnesota many years ago, and it's good to see you doing well and continue to stay healthy and prosperous as well.
Yeah, I was president of Cub Foods at that time.
So, that's right.
Yeah, well,
did a great job and great representative of Cub Foods in that time, that cold place. But you stayed up in the cold. You're still up in Chicago. So you, I left and got down to Charlotte, though. So
good for you.
Keith, before we begin, can you share with the audience any latest news going on with you? I know you're in a new position now.
Yeah, a couple things. You know, the first thing is I'm actually working on hopefully my final book. It's called Diversity Is Not Enough. A call to recruit, develop, and promote Black talent.
I like that.
It's really an effort for me to share with those in power and those who are sincere about the advancement of Black talent in corporate America. It eliminates excuses of I don't know where to find them.
Yes.
I don't know how to do this. And so it's really a collection of over 40 years of experience in doing this work to help, again, those folks who are sincere say, hey, here's how I can get it done. That's the first thing. The second thing is I'm probably in one of the most, I would say, fortunate and rewarding roles in my career. I'm vice president of community engagement and support for Walmart. And really what that means is I work primarily in Chicago to help really strengthen that relationship between the community in which we serve and Walmart. Too often big companies like Walmart, we go into a community and we mean well, and we do well, but there's ways to do better. And so there's things like making sure from an economic empowerment standpoint that any contracts we give for construction, that Black engineering and construction companies can participate, any facilities management that had to take place at the store level, snow removal, electrical plumbing, that again, there are people of color, Black people from the neighborhood, from the community, making that happen. And last but not least, I was named to be head of Walmart's Racial Equity Initiative for Education. It's $100 million over 5 years. And I'm really proud of a relationship we forged with North Carolina A&T in November of 2020.
Aggie Pride, Walmart, Aggie Pride there.
There you go, Aggie Pride. We received $5 million to help students in their business and engineering program with internships, tutoring, tuition assistance, the whole nine yards. So this is really rewarding. I'm at that season and that point in my life where it's about giving back significantly, legacy. And so it's just really, it's a great job to have.
Man, congratulations. And all my daughters that went to North Carolina A&T, my wife went there as well. So big Aggie fan. So I love the fact that you're working with Walmart and you're kind of spearheading that effort. So I appreciate that big time. And it's making a difference in our communities as well. So again, Keith, you know, a big part of what I wanted to do with this podcast was to introduce people to amazing people like yourself and have them hear the backstory of how you got there and some of the challenges you faced. Because oftentimes in our society, we have a lot of individuals who may not necessarily know the backstories of a lot of people and some of the challenges they face and may not necessarily know the blueprints in terms of how to make it out of situations that may appear to be challenging, overwhelming. The obstacles don't stop coming. So I'm very, very happy that you're going to be on the show today and share with us a little bit about that. So I'm going to start off with question number one. What's been the biggest obstacles you had to overcome professionally or personally in your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's two. And one is more internal relative to me, and the other is, you know, more external, what happened to me. But internally, the number one obstacle was I had to get out of my mind very early, and I did this when I was in high school and college, that I couldn't do something because of my color, my race, what have you. I accepted the fact that it would be different, that it would be challenging, but that if I really, one, performed, but not only performed, developed the relationships, understood kind of the game of corporate America, because it is a game, he who's at the top makes the rules. And so the biggest obstacle was for me really getting past the point of if I just did good work, people would promote me and raise me. I had to realize that, you know, no, there's a process to going through and getting promoted, that it's a relationship game, it's a knowledge game, and there's a little timing in that. So that was the first one. But the biggest one, and I'm a big believer, Dr. Watson, that we learn more from our failures than our successes.
Yes.
I started in corporate America in 1980. So it's been over 40 years, and I had a charmed career for most of that time. Started with AT&T, later on IBM, and you know, matriculated to be president of Pitney Bowes Management Services, president of Acme Markets, president of Cub Foods, and just had a charmed career. But in 2013, for the first time in my career, I find myself without a job.
Wow.
I was president of Acme Markets. We got sold to a combination of a private equity of Cerberus and Albertsons. And so, you know, I got the, I won't call it a golden parachute, but I got a nice chunk of change to sit and had a non-compete. And what made that challenge is because in my mind, with my background, with my relationships, with my education, my connections, I thought maybe 6 months I'll take off and then I'll find a job like that.
Sure.
Tommy, it was 2.5 years.
Wow.
Before I got another role.
Two and a half years.
2.5 years.
Wow.
So imagine the mental exhaustion. And if I'm honest, the first 6 months was great. That was me spending time with all four of my kids and getting to know more than they were adults and making time. And again, I was a president, C-level role when I left.
Right.
So I would go out and headhunters would reach out and I'd interview for these CEO jobs and COO roles from very well-named companies. And one by one, I'd get to the final part of the interview, interview with the board, and the answer was no, or they found an internal candidate. And it began to really mess with my head because unfortunately, if we're not careful, we will tie our worth to our title.
Yes.
Right. And while I knew better, I became a victim of that, you know? And so when people who used to call me all the time, all of a sudden, if I called them, didn't return my calls, or, you know, it really bothered me.
Sure.
You know, when I went to my network of professional friends, some of them were very helpful. Some of them really weren't. And it really put me in a place spiritually. And I don't mean to get too spiritual on you, but I had to admit to myself, that my career was a blessed career, and that it wasn't because I was so bright, so brilliant, so smart, so connected. It was really God's favor. And it really wasn't until I had that acknowledgement and then also had to swallow my pride. And what I mean by that was I was refusing to interview for any role that wasn't a CEO, COO, or president.
Yes.
And so I started my own consulting business. And lo and behold, I did get hired by Walmart as a vice president. It was an officer level role. But even then, you know, it was a struggle psychologically for someone who had been president of this or that for 20 years to now, you know, on a board of directors of a publicly traded company to now, you know, title wise be a VP. That was a hard time.
Right. And, you know, that's a great example. And I really appreciate your transparency and sharing that because oftentimes we don't necessarily hear the struggles and the transitions of those folks who are in the C-level suite positions when there's a merger or something else takes place and those jobs go by the wayside. So as you were going through that, what were the feelings or emotions that kind of emerged and kind of subsided in you when you were going through this whole ordeal?
Yeah, it was almost like going through the stages of grief, right? Mm. You know, anger, resentment, you know. Mm. But ultimately, you know, it was very humbling. And it helped me understand and be more sensitive to the plight of others.
Mm.
It helped me understand, again, that, you know, it's not my brilliance that, you know, again, a lot of this was God's grace on my life. And it helped me not take myself so serious.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That was the real wake up call for me personally. But I felt a lot of anger. You know, there was one episode where literally we were at the house hunting phase for this role, had met with the board. And in the 24th hour, they called back and said, hey, you know, we're going to go internal. There was another situation with a company that is very well known that literally the chairman of the board looked at me and said, I can't see you being the face of this organization.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And while he didn't go into detail, we both knew what he meant.
Yeah.
And so those were things that were just very discouraging because, again, up until that point, a very charmed life.
Sure.
Right. And so, again, it was very humbling. You know, when I think about it, when I think about, you know, my focus and passion only increased after that to make sure that I can be someone who can open doors for others, be there, support others. And to that point, I went out and formed a group of Black men who were going through similar struggles and we networked and worked our way all back into roles.
But that's awesome. That's beautiful. You know, so leadership, we hear the term leadership can be lonely oftentimes. So how were you able to cope with this transition in your life? I mean, what were some things you did to kind of cope with and deal with the, keep yourself sane during this moment?
Well, the first thing I did was I met with my financial planner.
Smart move.
you know, I was ready for that. And I say that jokingly, but I will tell a lot of professionals, you know, you hear these stories about having 6 months or 12 months of money set aside as an emergency fund. That's reality. You know, I can tell you I was blessed. I didn't have to touch retirement or stock or anything like that. But, you know, that golden parachute, you know, it survived. And I also had to change my spending. I mean, there was those types of things that,
sure,
that really, you know, made a difference. And so that was the first step. The other thing I did was, because it was lonely, there were not a lot of people who understood,
right,
at this level what that's like, right?
Sure.
So I thank God for organizations like the Executive Leadership Council,
mm-hmm,
organization made up of the highest ranking Blacks and African Americans, because I was able to reach out to people like James White, who at the time was the CEO of Jamba Juice, and have him, you know, work me through this and kind of get me through this. Michael Hyder, who's the Chief Diversity Officer of Korn Ferry. You know, there were people who I could talk to who understood,
yes,
what I was going through,
yes,
and could encourage me. Until I got to the point I could encourage myself. And then again, I have to be honest with you, it brought me closer to God. You know,
sure,
it was one of those where I really got more into my relationship. I'm into relationship, not religion.
Yes.
So cultivated that. And so again, it really helped me be a better person overall.
Yeah. And you know, it takes moments like that for us to humble ourselves and really understand who's the true source of our resources, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you know, when you were talking to these other CEOs, in a mentor or advisory role, what was the best piece of advice you got from those folks?
The best piece of advice I got was a few things. One was, Keith, you know, you are every bit the executive you were, mm-hmm, before this happened. And so, you know, this isn't a reflection on you personally.
Right.
And that was huge because I kept personalizing it, right?
Yes.
Why me and this, that, and the other? That was the first. And the second thing was that this is a season.
Yes.
And change,
yes,
right? And so those were the two biggest things. You know, again, you know, I networked, you know, they got connections and I had a lot of help in meeting people because, again, you know, most jobs, at least at that level, you don't see on Indeed. I mean, it's about either an executive search or a relationship. And so they helped with those relationships to position me to where, you know, I got into Walmart.
That's awesome. So as you were going through this process, was there a moment in the process where things began to turn for you and you kind of felt that turn taking place and started to see a little light?
Yeah, it was about a year and a half in. And again, think about this, you know, 2.5 years.
Yes.
Not getting up every day. So my routine was totally broken, right?
Right.
But about, I'd say, a year and a half into it is where I got to the point where my attitude changed, my perspective changed, and my faith grew, where I,
yes,
knew it wasn't if, it was when.
Yes.
And it's amazing is when I put on that attitude of faith, that door started to open.
Yes.
That relationships, you know, started to get built. I was actually speaking at a food marketing institute about fresh in the grocery business. And that's where I actually met the head of Walmart stores at the time, a guy named Mike, you know. And so it was really once I changed my attitude,
yes,
changed my perspective, that's when things really changed.
Wow, that's awesome. So as you were going through this, what kept you going? What kept you motivated? What kept you fighting, you know, to get beyond that hurdle? What kept you going?
You know, the thing, the number one thing that kept me going was when I thought about all that my ancestors went through to get,
yeah,
me here.
Yeah.
Right. When I thought about my father, who spent 10 years at night to get a 4-year degree working in the steel mill.
Wow.
When I thought about grandfather who couldn't read or write, but, you know, worked at Sherwin-Williams to his death, signed his name with an X. Wow. When I thought the shoulders I stood on and all that they had endured for me to get to this point, I said to myself, how dare can I feel sorry for myself? Yes. How dare can I give up? So that was the other thing. The secondly, I have children and grandchildren who were watching me.
Yes.
Mind you, these are children and grandchildren who'd only seen me be successful.
Yes.
And so to show them what it's like to get knocked down,
yes,
and get back up was a huge lesson for them to see and for me to show.
Wow, that's awesome, because again, we never know who's watching, right?
Oh yeah.
We just never know who's watching on this journey of faith and failure sometimes as well.
Yeah, so, and at that point, you know, again, my children are in their 30s and they're all professionals. Each one of them has shared with me secretly that they were most proudest of me, not when I was winning awards, not when I was NAACP. It was, Dad, when we saw how you took that,
yes,
got back up, that encouraged them. So that, yes, that was.
Well, that's awesome. And kudos for them for sharing that with you as well. So Keith, when you look back, how do you think that experience changed you as a person?
Again, just much more attuned and sensitive to people going through similar situations, uh-huh, you know, because prior to that, I would just say, well, fill out your resume, go to, I mean, you know, but having gone through it and the, yeah, emotions of what it does to,
yes,
you made me much more sensitive.
Yes.
It made me much more humble because I realized that, you know, whatever the company, IBM, AT&T, that was just the name on the check that God allowed, but that, yes, all of my gifts, everything I got came from him.
Yes.
And it also made me, you know, humble myself, because I'm not gonna be honest with you. You know, I kind of got in a big head a little,
yeah,
bit, you know,
absolutely,
magazine covers and writing books and,
you're right.
and it really just showed me it wasn't about me.
Yes.
And really all the things that had happened to me, my talent, my treasure, was really something that should be used to help others with.
Yes.
And so it really just made me double down on the desire and the passion to help others.
Wow, that's awesome. That's the way we want to emerge from those ashes with that type of perspective there. So if you went back again, what would you do differently about as you went, if you had a chance to go back, what would you do differently?
Well, the first thing I would do is I probably wouldn't have spent as much money I did the first 6 months. And what I kept living like I was still that money, right?
You know, right.
Package, but you know, then I found about taxation at that level. I'm like, geez. So that was one thing. The second thing I think I would have done differently is I probably would have made sure I got into a routine very similar to working a job, right? That I would get, okay, up, and ultimately I got there, right? You know, there's a time to, you know, scour the internet. There's a time to reach out and network. I probably would have, and this is huge, swallowed my pride earlier and reached out peers to let them know I needed help.
Wow.
I'm the type of individual, right, wrong, or indifferent, who I don't like to ask for help.
Sure.
And it took me a while to say, you know what? I need to let people, you know, in my circle know, here's my situation. Here's what I'm trying to do.
Yes.
Right. And you help me. It took me a long time to get there, to swallow my pride, if I'm honest, to get there.
Sure.
And the other thing too, is I probably would not have been, and I can only use the word arrogant, to say that I would only be a CEO, CEO or president, right? Because, sure, it's really not about the title as much as it is about the value of the role, right? And so I think those were kind of three things I would have done differently.
That's a great point. Not about the title, but the value of the role and the mm-hmm. role that you're serving.
And the impact you can have, yeah.
Yes, I love that. That's great. So Keith, if we have some folks out there come out of 2020 who are struggling to find employment and other things like that, what advice would you give them in terms of staying committed to the commitment to get beyond the hurdle? So what would you tell them?
I mean, the first thing I would tell them is to persevere.
Uh-huh.
That this too shall pass. You know, one of many scriptures the Bible start with, it came to pass. And so, yes, this too shall pass. So I would remind them that this is just a season. I would reinforce the importance of networking with people and really making sure that folks are aware of your situation.
Yes.
And because you'd be amazed at people who would be willing to help you if they only knew.
Right, absolutely.
And most of them don't know is because, like me, you're too prideful, right? Uh-huh. I would ask them to consider expanding their role. So maybe they were in accounting or maybe they were at a certain level. Don't limit yourself to a title or a specific, you know, niche. Open your ideas to, you know, the expansion, right? You know, there's so much going on. If you think about even the grocery retail space, you know, how it moved away from brick and mortar to, you know, an online, sure, environment. Well, that requires a different skill set. That requires IT professionals. That requires people who can operate in a multifunctional environment. So just expand what your opportunities are. And then to be just as aggressive in pursuing them as you are in your role in life. I mean, you've been successful up to this point because of what you've done. Just keep doing those things as you look to pursue that next opportunity.
Man, that's great advice. Keith, if people want to get a hold of you before we go into our next session, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, keithweitz.com. You can go to my website. You can go to LinkedIn and connect with me there. Or, you know, if you're so inclined, email me at keith@keithweitz.com.
Awesome. And Keith is phenomenal. You're talking about a guy who makes himself open and available to those who want to seek and get information. I can't tell you how much it meant to me, you know, just getting the chance to sit down with you when you were president of Cub Foods. So I appreciate that big time. So Keith, so we're going to do now, we're going to have some fun. We talked about the heavy stuff. Right. We're going to go into this next session. It's called Rapid Fire Purpose Questions. All right. You ready for this?
I'm not ready, but I'm going to be ready.
I like that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask you a number of questions. I'm not going to give you any, I'm not going to give any follow-up statements or anything. And you just provide us with your best answer to each statement, to each question. Okay.
And this is going to be fun, right?
This is going to be fun, man. Fun for me and the listening audience for sure. So Keith, tell us, how have you turned a dream into a reality?
Dream into reality. For years and years and years, I wanted to be a writer. Even in high school, I was editor of school newspapers. In college, I was the editor of The Vindicator, the black newspaper at Cleveland State. But, you know, I didn't want to pursue that as a vocation. But it was always a dream in the back of my head. And so, you know, again, would write and write over time. And as it turns out, in 2007, I got the opportunity to write Good Is Not Enough for Penguin Press. And so that was a reality that came true, primarily just because it was a passion of mine I never let go of.
Wow, that's awesome. I got that book. Great book as well. Yeah. What gives your life meaning?
What gives my life meaning? You know, it's about purpose. And I'm going to tell you, when you lock into the purpose, right, you know, I don't think a lot of us think about it. And I didn't think about it until I was probably well in my 40s. We weren't just put here to make money, right, have a job, have a family and die. Yeah. You know, and so it was asking myself, what was I put here for? What was God's purpose for me? And once I found that purpose and passion, which is really helping teach and develop other folks in the areas of career development and talent management, it became fun.
Man, that's awesome. What verb would you use to describe you?
Tenacious.
Tenacious. Okay. What problems do you want to solve in our world?
I want to solve people problems. And what I mean by that is, you know, we live in a world, particularly now, that's so racially divided. And the reality of it is we have so much more in common than we do apart. The Human Genome Study told us that 99.9% of us we have the same everything except, you know, that 0.1%. And so helping people understand, you know, the challenges and the uniquenesses. One of the ways I've done that recently is really helping people understand the history of Black people in this country.
Sure.
That, you know, we're not financially disadvantaged because we don't save money, but right, we weren't able to take advantage of things like Social Security when it was first announced, because again, it kept people out who were farmers or you know, house workers. Well, that was my grandparents, right?
Sure.
I talk about the GI Bill and how my father, when he came home from the Korean War, he couldn't take advantage of that to get a home. Well, think, wow, about people who could. So helping people understand, you know, here's the plight, because I think I have found that when you educate people, it creates awareness,
yes,
that leads to empathy, which should lead to action.
Yes, I love it. I love it. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Oh man, my favorite thing to do as a kid was to play basketball, and I was terrible at it. my favorite thing to do.
I love it.
Trash. I kept playing.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
You know, it's interesting. I think people make time people, places, and things that are important to them. And so at this stage of my life, you know, what I want to make more time for is family and friends and grandchildren, which, you know, grandkids are great. I wish I could have had them before the kids. But just making sure that I spend time with those quality relationships, people and friends. Because at the end of the day, you know, I love Walmart, but, you know, they're probably not going to be at my funeral, right? You know, it's those people and those relationships.
Absolutely. So what did your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing today?
Wow. You know, my 15-year-old self was very ambitious, but it didn't see this. You know, my 15-year-old self probably saw me being, you know, head of an office of Xerox in Cleveland, right? You know, it was really not that bold. And so, you know, I am not only my ancestors' wildest dream, I'm actually my own wildest dream.
Yes, I love it. Who inspires you the most?
Who inspires me the most? You know, my dad unfortunately passed in 1988, but he still inspires me. Again, I talk about, you know, imagine, you know, going to your dad's graduation as 4 years old, because, you know, again, he took 10 years to get that degree, you know, yes. Seeing that. And so, again, I think about that. I think about the racism he encountered, which was much more visible than what I did when he finally did break into the banking industry. And so when I think about, you know, the hurdles he had to overcome, my grandfather, those are my motivations. I have two uncles. And so those are the folks that really, really motivate me the most.
That's great. What's something about yourself that most would be surprised to learn about you?
Most people would be surprised that at my core, I'm an introvert. And when I say introvert, it means a couple of things. One, I get my energy by myself. I don't need to be around a lot of people. And two, I really don't like being around a lot of people. You know, if you really see me nervous, have me go to a cocktail party after work or some type of reception. Again, I'm very introverted, much of a loner. Now, when I'm on stage, or I can be on, but at my core, I'm an introvert.
Okay, that's good. That's really good, especially as a leader. That's interesting, though. What's on your bucket list to do within the next year?
Next year, COVID kind of blew that plan, because I did plan to go to Africa, but just given things happened with COVID, that happened. So, you know, my bucket list for the next year, do not laugh at me, is I do want to learn how to swim correctly.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Keith.
Yeah. And I say swim correctly because, again, I grew up in the inner city. You know, there weren't a whole lot of pools around there. But right.
You know, were you jumping in with your jeans on, swim with your jeans on, your shorts on, all that stuff?
You know, white socks every day. Right? But, you know, now that I've gotten older and it's I have pools at my home, you know, it's like, okay, dude, learn how to swim the right way in case you've got to help save somebody. So that's right. On my book.
Yeah, I love it. That's something we can, you know, use the term correctly. I think I can probably indulge with you on there as well. What's something you'll spend time doing no matter what?
You know, no matter what, I spend every day kind of in meditation and having a daily devotional, right? You know, I have found that for me to start my day and to stay mentally grounded, that's what I need. And so, you know, I do it every day.
Awesome. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you?
I want them to say, that's interesting, that there went a man who took his time, his talent, and his treasure to help make others realize their dreams and be better.
Love it. If you were a superhero, what would your power be?
If I were a superhero, my power would probably be X-ray vision. To be able to see things that others can't see.
See, that's a good one to have there, yes. So if I were to walk around your home right now, what would it reveal about what you love?
If you walk around my home right now, you would probably say he loves art in general, Black art in particular. You would say that he loves very contemporary furniture and that he loves his music, primarily R&B and what I'll call smooth jazz.
All right. I knew we had a lot in common here, Keith. I love it, man. I love it. What would you go back to school for?
What would I go back to school for? One, I think we always are in a space of continual, you know, learning and continuous learning and intellectual curiosity. But I would probably go back to school to learn Spanish.
Okay, that's a good one. What sparks your creativity?
What sparks my creativity? You know, it's interesting. It happens to me usually at night. I'll get an idea. And what sparks it is really something I've observed or seen through the day, you know, where someone will call me and say, hey, here's something I had an issue with. Here's a problem I'm having. And all of a sudden, my mind starts working as to how to help solve that problem. Sadly, sometimes it's 2 a.m. when I get that thought and that curiosity. So I actually keep a notepad next to my bed. That's, you know, it's experience. It's mind and experience of others and problems and challenges and trying to solve them.
Okay, great. If you became president today, what would be the first law you would pass?
Wow, I haven't given that a thought. And there's so many I would pass. But you know, right now, I think I'd be like the Democrats trying to get that $2,000 stimulus check to vote to help, you know, because again, I understand, you know, I would probably do things around education with loan forgiveness, student loan forgiveness. I think the cost of student loans and the fact for Black people, so many of us have debt, student loan debt that we deal with, you know, student loan forgiveness would be one of the things that would probably be top of mind.
I love it. I think you'd make a lot of people very happy with that. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be?
If I could follow someone around for a day, who would it be? I'll give you that answer too, alive and dead. Obviously dead would be Jesus. I'd love to follow him around for a day. And alive, I would probably, you know, want to follow around Kamala Harris.
Okay.
To really kind of, you know, see how she moves, just so proud of her, impressed. So those would be my two choices today.
Okay. What's been the best gift someone's ever given you?
Wow, the best gift someone's given me. You know, the gifts that mean the most to me aren't material things. You know, some of the best gifts I've gotten were handwritten cards from my kids, just telling me how much they loved me and admired me when they were little kids. I mean, those gifts meant the most. And I would probably say in a true gift sense would just be, you know, the gifts that my parents gave me in the form of opportunity to be successful.
I love it. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Believe it or not, it's not, oh, you speak so well. That's the compliment I hate to get from people because all they go. Probably the biggest compliment was I could tell that you were really enjoying what you were doing. And that's usually when I'm giving a speech or having a conversation in a mentoring session. That's probably the biggest compliment.
Okay, great. What's one thing you have never been afraid to do?
You know, I've never been afraid to try. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, Michael Jordan, you know, wrote a book many years ago. I can't accept not trying. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I'm one of those folks. I'm willing to try. I'm willing to take chances. Too many of us don't take risks in our lives. And so, you know, while I'm not a foolish risk taker, I'm not afraid to try.
Oh, I love it. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
Ooh, from my childhood. Yeah. I was kind of an interesting kid. the thing I was probably most proud of in my childhood was being elected class president my freshman year in a school that was 95% white.
Wow.
And proud from the sense of, you know, being able to learn and connect and move in other circles to where I was able to create followership in spite of who I looked like and what I was.
Sure. Sure. What does success look like for you?
Yeah, success is different. It's funny. If you'd asked me that question maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, I would give you a different answer. To me, success ultimately is living out the purpose that you were put on this earth to perform.
Yes.
Right? And that covers many facets for me. You know, being a father, you know, being fruitful and multiplying and investing in my kids to make them be all that they can be. But ultimately, you know, being able to live in that purpose to one day, you know, hear the master say, well done.
Yes, I love it. Speaking of purpose, for those folks who know you best, what would they say your purpose is in life?
For those who know me best, they would say that I'm an encourager and I'm a supporter and I'm an uplifter of others.
What are you most grateful of?
I'm grateful for today, right? Because there's nothing I can do about yesterday. Tomorrow isn't here. And so today is the present and it is a present.
Yes. What's the biggest lesson you've learned in life?
Is that it's not about me.
Good one.
It took a while to learn that one.
Yes. And last but not least, how do you want to be remembered in history?
You know, the reality is with the exception of, you know, my family, a few close friends, you know, 100 years from now, nobody will know who Keith White was. But for those who do remember and will remember, just as a person who enjoyed life, enjoyed giving, enjoyed sharing.
Yes. Keith, you survived. Give yourself a round of applause, brother.
Amen. Yeah. that wasn't fun for me, but glad it was fun.
Hey, great answers, Keith, and I really appreciate you big time, brother. Any last advice you want to share with the folks out there when it comes to purpose and resiliency?
Yeah, I would just share that, again, if you can understand the miracle of birth, the fact that you are here is not an exception. It's on purpose.
Yes.
And that, you know, you were built and designed for probably so much more than we're living and you're experiencing right now. And so I would say, you know, do that self-reflection onto, you know, what is it I'm good for, good at? What is it that, you know, gives me joy and pleasure? What is it that I can do to be an asset? And try and find your purpose in life. And I think, you know, once you find that and it clicks, you'd be amazed at how life will open up doors and God will open up doors in your life.
Folks, there you have it. Great advice from my friend, my fraternity brother, Keith Weiss. Check him out. Rue, got to throw that in there. Be sure to follow him, keithweiss.com. Is that what it is?
That's it. Absolutely. That's the best place to follow me.
Go to the website. And your most recent book is?
My forthcoming book, it's coming out, is called Diversity Is Not Enough.
Diversity is not enough.
But I would encourage readers to read, you know, Corner Office Rules. It was probably, you know, my second favorite book I've written. And it really talks about how to prepare yourself to move from middle management to senior management and the surprises and the things that you need to prepare for. So Corner Office Rules.
That's awesome. Be sure to follow Keith and subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, review it, share with your folks on social media. Remember to go to our website, tawatson.com. And those of you out there who have great stories of overcoming, we want to hear your stories. Go to our website, tawatson.com. Share your story with us. We look forward to seeing you for our next podcast episode. Everyone out there, God bless and deuces.
Yours truly, Dr. Watson.